I'm a very impulsive guy. For you guys, for those of you who don't know, I'm very. That's actually one of my better traits, and probably one of my worst traits is I'm very impulsive. I actually had a sermon prepared, and decided I didn't want to preach about it. And I feel like this is just me. I feel like as a preacher, if I have something prepared and right before the day of, if I feel like I shouldn't preach that sermon, then I'm probably getting nudged and prodded to do something different. So I got a different lesson, and it's a kind of a Frankenstein of two others I've already done, and it seems a lot more relevant, I guess, to the message I actually wanted to portray. And so I feel like whenever I like to tell people whenever I get these urges that I'm kind of getting pushed to do something that God would prefer me to do, it could just be I'm impulsive and I get little ticks and I chase rabbits. But I do want to go into a phrase that we all know, and it's real big around Christmas time. I remember growing up that it was the worst thing I could ever hear as a 5-year-old kid. And the phrase is actually, batteries are not included. My parents never paid attention to the boxes of anything they got me. And so we never had batteries. The batteries in my household growing up are probably like the batteries in your household growing up. There's never enough of them. There's always too many uses for them. So what you end up finding, and especially in my house, is the batteries out of different things that always get pilfered and put someplace else. And so you'd go to switch the remote or switch the TV channel, and there's no batteries in it because the batteries ended up in some controller elsewhere or out of my sister's alarm clock and into my Xbox controller or something. Batteries were a hot commodity. And come Christmas time, that was the only thing I remember as a very little kid that could erase my excitement, because I knew we didn't have enough batteries. There was never any batteries in the house. So my excitement on Christmas would sometimes get built up really big, and then I see the, you know, little words at the very bottom, because the toy companies were always too embarrassed to put them in big. And it'd say, like, right across the bottom in the very corner where you can't see them, it said, batteries not included. I actually got the idea for this sermon. I was actually told to do this sermon by Randy Frazier. He had did a sermon that he's done, I believe, here, and he's done elsewhere, called Some Assembly Required. And he did that at Rabbit Ridge, and he said, now, I need someone to do a batteries not included. And I worked on that sermon for several years trying to figure out how to actually make it work. And it finally took shape, and I really enjoyed it, and I've played with it over the years. And it's something that I feel like I, as a Christian, need to revisit every once in a while for myself. So, the batteries are not included, and that's actually the analogy, or I use this analogy in reference to this book. This is, as you guys know, I finally found a preaching Bible. It was exactly where I knew it was after I, you know, couldn't do anything about it. But this is the Bible, and the batteries are not included with it. And that's a funny thing to say. I said that, and when I said that at Rabbit Ridge, I got some really interesting looks, because we like to look at this book as perfect. And so when you say it's incomplete, people are going to give you funny looks. But I can prove it's incomplete. You see, I can take this book to any one of you and set it on your lap and leave it, and you're not going to become a better Christian. I can go out anywhere on Conway and hit a passerby in the head and hold it on his forehead. He's not going to get this by osmosis. It doesn't work that way. And these books actually don't do well in water. You have to do something with this. The batteries aren't included. This book may be perfect. It may be everything you need to get to heaven, but it is incomplete. It doesn't read itself. You can keep it on your shelf. You can put it on a nightstand every night. It's not going to read itself. You can give it to people. Doesn't mean they're going to read it. You can, every day of your life, claim to live by it. Doesn't mean you're a Christian. The batteries aren't included. So we know that the word is powerful. It the Bible's very impressive. The Bible has something for everybody. There's a reason why it has impacted people from the hill countries in Russia all the way to, you know, the Amazon, the tropics, down to the southern tip of South America, through every portion of North America, I mean, all over. Every culture, every language, every people group has been impacted by Christianity. It is a universal message, and that's pretty rare. That's something in itself, as I think, a very strong proof that what we read in this book is actually orchestrated and created by an omnipotent God. Because this book does have something for everybody. The greatest works of the greatest writers throughout history all appeal to certain groups. And it takes a certain person. You know, Shakespeare's words appeal to certain people. And not everyone today can appreciate Shakespeare. I can't understand it. I don't appreciate it. Some of the stories are cool, but I have to read the translated version because I can't understand it. It takes an elite English or a literary mind to understand the original words of Shakespeare. It takes a specific group to look at that and read it and appreciate it. There's something in this book for everybody. Whether it's just the Proverbs to an average person or to a struggling parent, whether it's a Psalms for a depressed person or a Psalms for a happy and upbeat person, or whether it's the historian that likes to read Luke's writing or the historian that looks at the Old Testament, whether it's the theologian that studies everything, every person and every individual common person can read it. You don't have to be a brilliant theologian or a great literary genius to appreciate the poetry in this. You don't have to be able to understand every little thing in Daniel or Ezekiel and to understand all the great mysteries in Revelation to appreciate it. You don't have to be a super smart whiz to understand the connections between some Old Testament prophecies and Jesus. It's a very simple book. And it's an extremely complex book. It's got something for everybody. And there's a reason why it's changed an entire world. There's a reason why billions of people have had their lives changed, in good or bad, for some reason or another, by this book. It is a universal and perfect book. It's a shame there isn't more to it. And I complain about that all the time. John stated at the end of his gospel that he could have filled up the world with all the stuff that Jesus said in those 40 days. And I said, well, you should have. Quit being lazy. I want to know more. And, you know, the writers were limited by time, by space, by resources, by plenty of things, where they were limited just to the fact that God said this is what they need. And, I mean, look, it's not overly big. Have anyone ever tried to read War and Peace? I have. It's ridiculous. There's too much of it. I also tried reading the unabridged copy of Moby Dick when I was like 8 years old, and I spent 2 months on that book. It's too big. This book, there's a lot in it. But the cool thing about the Bible is, it isn't just one narrative from in the beginning all the way to I am coming soon. There is so many different books, chapters, there's different themes, there's different perspectives on everything. It isn't just you have to look at the whole epic of Christianity to appreciate it. You can do a study on Mark and appreciate it. You can do a study on Romans and appreciate it. You can do a study on just three different Psalms and appreciate it. You can get the message of God from small portions of the Bible. And that's impressive. That's very impressive. That's why it's universal. It's fantastic. The word is powerful. It has the ability to change lives, whether the people become Christians or not. I do think this should be, like many of the Proverbs, should be required reading to become a parent. I believe that like the first four chapters of Proverbs should be required reading. Like as you're waiting on the baby to come, if you haven't already done it, the hospital on their checklist should make you read the first four chapters of Proverbs. Whether you're a secular person or not, this is good reading. It is worth changing your life, whether you become a Christian or not. Now, of course, we as Christians would say, well, we hope you become a Christian out of it, but the world would be a better place if people just adopted what was in this book, whether they became Christian or not. And that's fantastic. This is something that makes the Bible stand the test of time. So the Word gives wisdom and knowledge that the secular world can use. It's a powerful historical reference. Historians actually reference the Bible a lot. The Old Testament is very historically proven. The notes that were kept, the records that were kept, were accurate. And they've always been a great tool for historians. The Psalms are, you know, like I said, a comfort when they're depressed. Job is actually something that comforts me a lot. Job is also a very humbling book. I look at the 38th chapter, and Job is very humbling. It's got all the different uses. And, of course, talking about people that are just literary, got those great literary minds, Job is very beautifully written. Again, I'm not a big literacy person, so I'm definitely not a big poetry person, so I couldn't appreciate it as much as, like, say, my aunt, who's a very big poetry-based person, and she enjoys stuff like that, so it's one that she may enjoy Job much better than me. And then, like, the letters to Timothy. 1 and 2 Timothy are right up there with James and John as, like, my favorite books in the Bible. I'm a big fan of 1 and 2 Timothy. It isn't just that I was a young preacher. It's everything about it. The analogies that Paul uses when he writes to Timothy, I can feel like I can apply them to my life better than I can some of the analogies used elsewhere. I'm a big fan of 1 and 2 Timothy. We all have the portion of our Bible that we can read ourselves into very easily. And that's the fantastic thing about it. And saying that, we are the battery. We are what powers this. We are what makes this more than just words on a page. This may be a perfect book, but without being wielded by a Christian, it can also be a very dangerous weapon. If wielded by people for the wrong reasons, we've seen this book control an entire continent very incorrectly. You saw that through the Middle Ages. You saw that this book was used for evil. And it probably caused the loss of, millions of souls who believed they were perfectly justified, but were being misled by a cruel group of elites. But we've also seen this book being used correctly that rallied an empire around its banner and defeated an army they shouldn't have beaten. And those are, you know, long after the fact. But we can actually go in and read about of a small group, a little buffer state in Israel, a blip on the map caught between the great empire of Egypt and caught between the great empires of the Tigris and Euphrates, this little buffer state, which kept its independence for so long. A small group of people who were so strong. The crazy thing is, there's actually, us historians are actually, there's a lot of studying going on to what's called the Sea Peoples. We didn't know where they came from. These Sea Peoples are a group of people. One of these people groups was actually the Philistines. The Philistines weren't native to the Mediterranean area. We got no clue where that came from. Me and a professor of mine, actually, we had a big study on it through a part of the class where we just kind of tried figuring out where the Philistines came from. It isn't from any southern portion of Europe. It wasn't from northern Africa. They came by the sea. That's why they're called the Sea Peoples, because that's the only name we can make up for them. And that's actually the big, the people of ancient history, that's kind of their big study focus right now, is where the Philistines and other groups came from. But these Philistines actually toppled the Tigris and Euphrates empires. But as we can read in the Bibles, the Philistines, who were a thorn in the side of Israel for so long, were eventually defeated. And we have a united kingdom arise. That's something special that we find in here. So we've seen how the Word can operate. We've seen how Christians can be throughout history. We've seen how people who trust in God can be. We've seen how powerful they can be. We've seen what the Bible can do in people's lives. There's a story I like to go back to. It's something I found when I was studying for one of my very first sermons. It's the story of Sue Norton and Buddy Knighton. Sue Norton was an elderly woman. She'd been married for a long, long time. And a guy named Buddy Knighton had his truck break down outside their farm, decided he needed a new vehicle, decided to steal Sue and her husband's vehicle. Husband came out. Buddy shot the husband and killed him, stole the vehicle. Didn't make it very far, got arrested, was in jail. Sue ended up speaking with him, partially out of vengeance. She wanted him to see her, the grieving widow, and kind of feel remorse. And she ended up saying that she felt remorse for him because he was going to hell. And she was a Christian. And so through over a year of back and forth correspondence with this man, she converted him. And she actually spoke at his the trial for the kind of the hearing for his execution, because he did get the death penalty. And she actually spoke up and said, because I believe in the law, I believe he should be executed. Because I also know that he is now a Christian, I can say that he is in a much better place than on after the execution than beforehand. She said she didn't want him to rot in prison, even though he deserved it for his crimes, and she believed in the law and did not believe he should ever be let out of prison. And she said, if it's the people's will that he be executed, he will be better off. The Bible changed. I'm sure she came out of that experience a much better Christian, because she actually had to stare at her husband's killer, and she obviously forgave him. She obviously converted him. Buddy Knighton was indeed executed, and you got to think that he went to heaven if she was actually, if he wasn't just, you know, making it all up. But it's a powerful thing. It's hard to see other means as rising above a tragedy like that. But we see Christians do it all the time. That gives us hope. It's a powerful thing when the batteries are actually used. So the work has to be done by us. Unfortunately, it can't read itself. Unfortunately, it doesn't just fall out of the sky and latch onto your head and seep its knowledge into you. We actually have to study it. And that's a two-edged sword. A lot of people will like to delve themselves into it and come out of it and use it. But that kind of knowledge is also, you know, we see it as dangerous. We've seen people misuse it. We've seen people use it. But it's one of those that if it's just left stagnant, which is unfortunately the issue probably a lot of us have had at one point in time of our lives, where we see our Bible gather dust. You know, I've seen this quote over and over in various mediums that the devil does not fear a dusty Bible. I mean, why would he? And that's something that I'm sure we've all been guilty at one point or another, where this has become just a book. And we forget that we still need to dive into it and study it, whether we've read it from front to back or not. So the power has to come from the Christian. God isn't speaking out through great men or great women like he did in the past. We don't have a Jeremiah. We don't have an Elijah standing on a mountaintop proclaiming the word of God. They've done that. We have their words. And so now it's different. God always, I look at the way Jesus handled the apostles, and I say that God obviously has a lot of faith in us. Jesus preached for 3 years. The apostles were the ones that went out and spread the message. And now we're left with the book. And we're not even left with everything Jesus said. We're left with a portion of it. So God obviously has enough faith in me and you that we can take what we have here and live a life according to him and treat others how his son treated people. And that's an actually pretty impressive thing. So we have to have a sincere love for applying this book to our life, for doing more with the word of God. You know, the word of God is described as a sword and as a living sword. It's something that's a weapon. It's something that we're supposed to use to pierce through sin, to pierce through Satan and all his demons that are trying to pull us back to hell, where we originally set our course for. We know that we've all sinned and everything. And it's one of those that, you know, I like the analogy of it being a sword, because we all know we're in a fight for our souls. And as it's something that, You know, anyone can kind of imagine, you don't go to your job without the proper equipment. You know, no soldier goes into combat without a rifle. I like to say that a soldier without a working rifle or without his rifle is worse than a non-factor. He's actually now a liability. If a soldier doesn't take care of his weapon and it fails and it can't fire, now I have to protect him and cover his area because he didn't do his own job. I say a soldier, a living soldier without a weapon is actually worse than just a terrible soldier. It's one of those that we as Christians, if we actually don't arm ourselves appropriately, if we're a Christian, I would say that actually an indifferent Christian, a lazy Christian, is actually better for the overall Christian faith than kind of an uninformed Christian. And I say that because of this, if you're kind of just a lazy Christian, a closet Christian, so to speak, that you're a Christian whenever these doors are open and when you're in here, but when you go out, you're kind of silent. Your light will shine in here, and when you go home, you kind of dim it down, and you kind of just don't make waves. You may not be damaging your own soul, but you're not really helping anyone else's. Okay, you know, some people may do that because they're shy. They don't feel like they know enough. They don't feel like it's their place. They may be in a very intimidating work environment. Okay. But so that kind of lazy Christian or just kind of shy or mellow Christian, they're kind of like a zero on a number line. They're not building to the kingdom, but they're sure not going backwards. They're keeping their own faith secure. But what about the Christian who is out there talking and socializing and trying to put God out there, but won't take the time to study this? And now they could be out there just spewing ignorance. And that's kind of a dangerous thing. And again, I talked about this morning how internet can be a double-edged sword. It's great for research. It's also great for maybe showing people how little you know. And it doesn't help to be a Christian who's out there attacking certain groups or certain people when you really don't know what's going on in here. It's one of those, if someone asks you a question and you just genuinely don't know it, you probably should say, "I'll get back to you," instead of just trying to make up something and now they come away with a false impression of Christianity. It's one of those that we actually have to sharpen our sword. It's one of those that we might have studied for a very good portion of our young adult life or our adult life, and now we've kind of got lazy, we've slacked off, we put the Bible on the shelf more, and we're relying on that old rusty weapon that was perfect 20 years ago. It was working great. It kept us safe in certain situations. And then whenever an old adversary, some form of temptation, maybe a colleague of ours who's not exactly a Christian or is actually against Christianity, and we grab that rusty old sword and try to defend ourselves with it, oh, what good does it do? What good does that do? It's not going to be worthwhile. You know, if I had to bet my family's life on a gun that I've maintained, a gun that I know is working, it's something I've practiced with, versus the showpiece on the wall that has been has been in the family for 500 years, and I just throw something together and try to use it, I'm not going to feel really confident my family's coming out of that situation okay. We can't let our tool here hang on our shelf and collect dust. If we don't sharpen our own mind, time's going to take care of it for us. You know, it's been said over and over and over, especially in the athletics world, Father Time is undefeated. You guys know I'm a huge Broncos fan. It pains me to do it because I never like to see an athlete fail. But I was extremely happy when Peyton Manning finally got pulled out of that game against the Chiefs. I hate seeing an athlete fail, but the guy's old and I'm more worried about his safety than anything because there is a life after football. But I like to see the young guy come into the game and save the day. And it was one of those, like, I'd hate to see Peyton Manning leave the game, even though I'm still kind of bitter about all his years with the Colts and knocking the Broncos out of the playoffs. But, you know, Father Time is undefeated. Eventually, what we were able to do when we were young, we're not able to do anymore. It's something we all have to face. The good thing is our mind generally keeps going. So if we don't sharpen our mind, if we leave this in the same state we were when we were a 15-year-old Christian or a 25-year-old Christian, And we're 55 now, 45, 85. I wouldn't want to dust off that old sword and try to fight with it. We got to keep sharpening it. We got to keep putting batteries into it. We got to keep working. We got to have a sincere love for God and the Bible, and not just trust on our knowledge from years ago. So with a willing heart, a willing Christian, and a good foundation in the Bible, you have a potential for greatness. You can see what good Christians do, ones that know their Bible, ones that know at least a good portion of it. It's one of those, like, if I get asked to do a sermon on the like the 15th through 20th chapters of Revelation, you're not going to see someone, if I have to do a sermon on that, you're going to see me shaking a lot, I'm going to be confused, I'm not going to sound sure of myself. But if I have to do a sermon on 2 Timothy, or a study on 2 Timothy, you're going to see someone with a lot more confidence. We don't have to understand this book from front to back, but if we do have a willing, working, powerful knowledge of the Scripture, whether it's just, I can understand the Gospels very well, I know what Jesus himself said. Paul dives into some things I don't quite get yet, but I know what Jesus said. You're still an effective Christian. You're still a growing Christian. And that can be whether you're 15 years old or 95 years old. Every day you're supposed to be growing. And that's the great thing about the Bible, is there's always something else to learn. But together, a good Christian with the Word, we see that greatness can be achieved, and we can do some pretty remarkable things. I like to say that we have the power to change the world. Each one of us individually has the power to change the world. And you may never see it, and you may never think it. But at the end of the day, when you look up and stand before God or kneel before God on Judgment Day and He's playing back your life, He may show you where your actions sent someone from hell to heaven, where you may not have noticed it, but you got someone from walking that broad path to destruction to somewhere on the straight and narrow. They may be way in the back with a very rudimentary knowledge of the Bible, or you may have put them on a path that put them way up there in the front. You don't know that, but won't that be a satisfying thing when God is playing out our life for us and we see that we literally changed an eternity for somebody? That could be pretty fun. That is something I hope I see when God puts my life on display. I hope I see where I did something that changed someone's soul. Because a lot of things had to happen for me to go from an indifferent Christian, and that's one where I use the word Christian lightly, because I don't think I was going to heaven. I thought I was. But I lived my life for 15 years thinking I was going to heaven. I went to church. I thought I was a good Christian. But I didn't have a love for God. I wasn't ever baptized. I didn't think I needed to be, because I didn't dive into this. And a lot of things happened for me to end up saying, I'm not going to heaven. And good people took care of me, and now I'm here. And I may not be the best, but I'm actually working my way to it. A lot of things have to happen, and it'd be certainly impressive if we're the catalyst for something in someone's life. Now, if you will, turn over to the book of James for me. Folks, James is a very short book. It's something you can read on a short amount of time. It's something that you can skim through and get something from every time you read it. The book of James is fantastic. It's a little bit on how true Christianity should look like. So we're going to look at James, the first chapter, verse 19. It says, "My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth and evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the word that is planted in you, which can save you. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourself, but do what it says." That's where a Christian has to put their feet in motion and follow what God said. We flip over to the next chapter, and we look at verse 14. Now, this passage here is something that we're all very familiar with, and I'm sure the majority of you guys can quote it. "What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food, if one of you says, go in peace, be warm and fed, there's nothing to suit their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, If it is not accompanied by action, is dead. Okay. Someone also says, you have your faith, I have deeds. Show me your faith without deeds. I will show you my faith by my deeds. You believe that there is one God, good. Even the demons believe that and shudder. This verse here is what I like to point out. A lot of people tell me that they were saved by a faith in God or a belief in God. And I tell people, Satan knows who Jesus is. It's not going to get him to heaven. The demons know who Jesus is. The demons confessed who he was when he was still on the earth. The demon said, what do you have? What do you want to do with us, you son of God? I mean, the demons even came out and confessed who Jesus was. It's got to be something a little bit more. We look at this and we say that if we don't have both, it's no different than me smacking someone with this Bible and saying, go to heaven. Become a Christian. If we're not actually putting what we know into action, then we're no different than someone going down the road and giving people Bibles and thinking that just because of that, we got everyone to heaven. Or me throwing this out in the middle of the street in Conway and saying, okay, I brought the word to Conway. We have to do something with it. We have to equip ourselves with it. If we in our life do not actually go out and try to bring the word to people, then we're just like the same lifeless toy that came without batteries and there wasn't any. We're useless. We might be pretty to look at and that's about it. But we don't fulfill the purpose that God gave us. And that's something I hope we do every day of our lives. It's something that it takes time, it takes effort, it takes work. Sometimes our batteries run dry and that's whenever we pop it open to Psalms and read a little bit about a man whose batteries had run dry multiple occasions. That's whenever we pop it over to Proverbs and whenever we have to get some advice because life is a little stressful for us. If we're not replenishing our batteries, or if we just say, okay, we're good like we are, then we've lost our original purpose. We're dead. We're useless. And we've become something to, you know, that your kids leave out and you stumble over it in the middle of the night. Folks, we have to look at this as our life source. But we also have to look at it as we are its life source. It's a symbiotic relationship. That's my second science reference in one sermon. I'm pretty proud of myself. I don't like science. It's if we don't give these words life, these words are useless. If these words don't give us life, we are useless. So that's something I hope we think about this coming up week. We all have a portion of the Bible we're comfortable with. We all have a portion of the Bible we're familiar with. I like to say that if you have your strengths and weaknesses, you identify them both. You build on your strengths half the time. You find a way to make that weakness not so much your weakness. We need to dive into this book. But most of all, we need to live this book. As I said this morning, it's a big pet peeve. If you have all the knowledge in the world, but you're not doing something with it, you're wasting what a beautiful talent you have. If you can absorb all this information, I know there's some great Bible scholars. If you have all that great knowledge, if you have a great command of the Word of God, use it. Please use it. Or help some of us out that can't remember things like we used to. Help us out. Help us do better. You know, some of us are shy. Some of us aren't good at speaking to people. Help equip those that are. We all got our talents. I hope that's a little of this this batteries not included analogy is something that sticks with you. That's something I hope my sermons do. A lot of sermons I do are kind of off the wall. They're kind of weird. I do that because I hope it, you know, Thursday night you remember something about them. Or something that you see in life that you don't normally associate with Christianity. You sit there and get a light bulb because of some weird thing I said on Sunday. So I hope you guys can take a look. And next time you see the dusty Bible on your shelf, realize that that's your lifeblood on the wall. And you're also its lifeblood. Think about it that way. If we're not using it, it's just as dead as we are. Don't let someone else be trying to take the opportunities you are. Because we don't know what kind of person they are. And I tell people all the time, there are opportunities God puts in front of us every day of our lives. Someone is going to take them. The hurt person we're following, or the hurt person we come across, something or someone is going to help them. Or hurt them. someone is going to impact that person's life. That someone could be someone who sells them prescription drugs legally, and the person ends up overdosing and dying. That someone could be someone like us who gives them and says, hey, read through these Psalms. This guy named David was very depressed, and that person turns their life around. We don't know what it could take. Don't miss these opportunities. This is our tool. Keep it sharp, keep it oiled, keep it looking good, and use it. Folks, you know, the road to being a Christian starts with something that takes a lot of courage. I can speak from experience, it takes a lot of effort to look at someone you respect or to look at someone you love and to look at a congregation and say, I'm wrong. It takes a lot of effort. But folks, I guarantee you the relief you will feel about coming forward and accepting the invitation is eternal. Change your soul. Again, same thing I said this morning. Don't walk out the doors with any kind of doubt in your life. Folks, if you have a need to accept the gospel, let us help you as we come and stand.